Video computers online. Archiving 44K. Initiate sequence.
T minus 30 seconds.
Server connection confirmed.
T minus 25 seconds.
Live stream for T120K.
T minus 20 seconds.
Phone lines are a go.
T minus 15 seconds.
Satellite uplink verified.
T minus 10 seconds.
Mic check complete. Satellite uplink verified.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. Now here is your host, Leno Sanic.
Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Leno Sanic. Today we are speaking to Michael Gregory from Sacramento.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for sharing time today. I know that when I talk to you about items other than music, it is generally in the vaccine and the awareness of some of the things happening. And I've been sending you articles. You've been posting a lot of articles that caught my attention. And I just wanted to make sure that for people listening that they caught the importance of some of these things that are coming out. They don't just get passed on.
Yeah, by this point, at the four-year mark, there's a lot of burnout.
Yeah. The one good thing is this week there were some hearings going on, among other people. Fauci, was, you know, being quizzed. And a lot of times, it's come almost like we know better now. We kind of got a real discerning eye or ear to what's going on. And you hear the question and then you hear the guy's answers and you go, no, that's not true. That's not it. And the thing that bothers me the most is that if you stand back and you say these guys were conducting genetic warfare. They were had labs going. If they weren't legal here, they farmed them out to somebody else. So at arm's length, they could say, we're not doing gain of research, gain of function research. No, you're not. You funded somebody else to do it for you.
Yeah, they made another layer.
Yeah, yeah. So if you don't mind, why don't you go through a couple of the things that you think that are important that people should not know about, that if they haven't been paying attention, these are some of the things because... Well, I'll just leave it to you to start with.
Okay. Well, number one, thank you for having me. As you know, I've been a longtime listener and appreciator of the show, and I've learned much on here myself. But as far as the COVID subject, just recently, you know, we could start from the most recent and kind of work our way out concentrically with the hearing with Dr. Fauci. And to let your audience know, politically, I basically call myself politically homeless. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat, not even a Libertarian or an Independent, really. There is no single party whose platform represents my views. But, you know, they each have little tidbits of things that are good, but it's not enough for me to align myself with any of them. So I'm not coming from that place, just so your listeners know. But in America, it's been very divided clearly along the two-party line that mainly those that, although COVID started under Trump, a Republican, the majority of the pandemic has been under the Biden administration, Democrats, and those like Fauci and Peter Daszak from EcoHealth Alliance, who was that layer we just mentioned that were... They were receiving the NIH funding, and then they were funding the Wuhan Institute of Virology, among other things. And so these players, basically, for those that are on the political left, are kind of a protected class. And it was only the Republicans that were grilling Fauci, and there was only one guy I saw that I really thought did a great job. You know, there was like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who just seemed like she was showboating and making political theater. out of it. When you've got the guy there, you could ask, he's under oath, you could ask really good questions, deep probing questions, and follow a line of inquiry. And, you know, they barely scratched the surface. And so that was pretty disappointing to me. I was not surprised because he had an answer, you know, for everything. And then there were certain Democrats that just basically hero worshipped him, gave him the tongue bath. You saved millions of lives, which is unquantifiable. You cannot quantify whether his pandemic response saved any lives. You cannot quantify whether the vaccine saved any lives, because we now know it to be what virologists call a leaky vaccine, in that it does not prevent transmission or acquiring the virus. So all of that together, you know, the hearing was just really weak. Are you familiar with Dr. Vinay Prasad?
Not really, no. But for those, you know, maybe listening, go ahead.
Okay. He has a YouTube channel that I started following during the pandemic. He's politically on the left. He's a liberal Democrat. He lives in San Francisco. And at the University of San Francisco Medical Center, one of the finest research institutions in the country. You know, it's up there with Beth Deacon Israel and Mayo Clinic and the Cleveland Clinic. It's a very top hospital. He's an oncologist and has a master's in public health. And he's one of the few people on the left that I've heard speak honestly, you know, not out of his political ideology, but as a physician, as a provider, as a public health professional. He has really been a very honest and fearless critic of the official government pandemic response. And he just put a video on his YouTube channel today that I listened to, giving his take on, you know, the hearing. And he said, "I'm someone who formerly admired Anthony Fauci very much, you know, being a person in healthcare and being in that space professionally." And he said, "I have to give him a D minus or an F on his responses in the hearing." You know, there was just the emails that have come out now due to the FOIA requests and the testimony earlier, a few days ago, of Dr. David Morenz, who was one of Fauci's chief aides in NIAID. He really shared some damning things, and he talked about how, you know, these emails that they were able to get to between him and Fauci and Peter Daszak, is say, "Hey, we're going to protect you, you know, get a burner phone and use, you know, use a private phone, use your Gmail account. And then anything you're doing on the NIH servers and email, misspell names and terms so that they won't be, you know, searchable under a FOIA search." And so the one example he gave was Christian Anderson, who is deep into the very beginnings of this whole COVID saga. They spelled, you know, the S's with dollar signs in his name. Things like this. So it was very obvious they were intentionally hiding and trying not to be, have what they were doing and saying be discoverable officially.
Well, yeah, if you don't mind me interrupting a little bit, it was shocking to me to find out that there was a woman there that was coaching them on how, the group of these people, on yes. how to avoid being caught in FOIA request. And then further to that, the fact that they were deleting what they could. I think yes. one guy said, "Hey, I've cleared it. I think we're almost out of the woods now." And then, like you mentioned, for them to get just what you want to refer to as a burner phone, where yeah. you can throw the phone away and then that number's never going to come back to you again. I mean, it's just, it's almost unbelievable. Like, the first time I was really pissed off is when I heard, they said, "Oh, I think the first booster was only tested on 8 mice and they okayed yeah. it." And I kind of, you know, you stop walking and you go, "I tested on 8 mice and that's it?
It is physically arresting. It just stuns you when you hear things like that.
Very good. That's physically arresting. Yeah. You know, I'm sitting in the chair right now, but I'm even kind of reliving that moment. And so you hear some of these and you start going back and you go, wait a minute. Did the thing even work at all? Like you're saying, don't say you saved millions of lives.
Right.
Did it even work?
Yeah. How can you quantify what good was done? You know, it basically kept people from getting, first it was it protects you 100%, then it was it protects you from a bad case, you know, and it protects you from hospitalization. They kept whittling it down. There's a video montage or collage from news, TV news segments in various markets around the country. And so, you know, 100% effective, 90% effective, you know, 97, 95, 93, 80. It just goes down and down until you're down into the 30s. And this was over the course of weeks, you know. And so they just slowly drip that out so that it's not this big shock that you go from 100% to 30%. And that 30% only lasts, you know, for a short time. Then you got to get a booster.
Let me ask you a question this way. We'll keep going. But like I mentioned, I was following the thing and I'm generally a little skeptical. But when I heard that about the first booster that was only tested on 8 mice, that's what really shook me. And I was going to ask you is that you've been following this from the beginning. And was there something, an item like that, that caught your attention that you would pause and say, wait a minute, this may not be even working at all?
Not just one item. It was cumulative. You know, it was cumulative. There was this aggregate knowledge that was coming out. A person that was really helpful early on in the pandemic was Dr. James Lyon Weiler, LYON-WEILER. And he has the Institute for the Practice of Applied Knowledge. It's called IPAC. But he made, when they were starting to do warp speed and work on the vaccine and get that came out, he in downtown Philadelphia held a news conference and just stood there at a podium in front of a building somewhere, probably a hospital where he works, and pleaded, you know, please don't release these vaccines like this, because he says, you've not tested them. There are unsafe epitopes. There is the matter of pathogenic priming, that it would train your immune system to just fight the spike protein that you received in the vax. And then as other variants came out, that your immune system would not recognize them and not fight them, and you'd be more at risk. And then Geert Vandenbosch, a gentleman in Europe, was saying that vaccines create, when you mass vaccinate in the middle of a pandemic, when it's rolling and just ripping through humanity like a fire, he said that creates selection pressure, because then the virus goes, oh, okay, people are getting this. I'm starting to recognize that. I'm going to work my way around it. And, you know, it's in principle the same thing with antibiotics. They make an antibiotic, then the infection, the germ gets smarter and figures out a way. That's just this nature. And so in making supposedly a cure or something to help, you actually are stimulating the thing to become different or even stronger. And so those two people, then Dr. Robert Malone, who, you know, sometimes he's gotten involved in some political things and that I don't mess with that at all. But his part about the vaccine was very instructive, because he was one of the people, the originals, who created that mRNA vaccine technology. He was one of the guys at the ground level of that. And so he had some very helpful things. So it, again, in aggregate and cumulatively through these voices out there that I was hearing, you know, okay, these guys are scientists. They're not Fauci. They're not, you know, Peter Hotez. They're not those guys. But they're scientists as well. I should listen to them and take it all in. And they really had a lot of helpful things for me that gave me a lot of those aha moments.
So like we're mentioning, this week there were some hearings going on, and there was some actually last week as well. And the thing that caught my attention again is that the level of deception caught me by surprise. It's not like they say, you know, we made some mistakes or we did this. It's like total denial. And then when you get into it, I actually wonder, and I think with some, I don't know what the right word is, just not veracity, but, you know, does the thing even work? Is this a fraud even bigger than I can imagine?
Right. My, you know, your listeners that have been with the show a long time are probably here like me initially because of the subject of political assassination. And that study, you know, led me into, you start reading about characters and you learn about the intelligence agencies and, you know, you keeping the work of Fletcher Prouty alive has helped a lot of people to understand the origins of the intelligence community. James Bamford, his books on NSA were very huge helps to me in understanding that. So when you see what our government is secretly capable of, and, you know, you talk about a physically arresting moment when you learn about something like Operation Northwoods, you know, where our government actually considered, floated the idea of shooting down a drone, an empty plane, saying Cuba did it, you know, as a pretext to go in there and attack them because they were the communist menace just off our shores. And you're like, wow. They were willing to do that.
Yeah, I think it was darker than that. They were going to say it was a plane full of high school students or something
right.
like that.
Really, really, yeah, put the disgust into it and really incite people's emotions. And look at the media through all of COVID. Boy, you talk about the mighty Wurlitzer, you know, of Alan Dulles and Frank Wisner. They have played this thing. So what I was originally getting to was, you know, the political assassination, that study led me into the intelligence community and all those agencies because they were just woven into it and such an intrinsic part of it, of that story and of the American story, you know, in our lifetime. And the origins of mRNA technology and gain of function, those things started with DARPA and with BARDA. Two advanced research project agencies that are not very well known. You know, some people know of DARPA because they created the internet, and the internet was created by DARPA to start to collect and archive all this social science knowledge that they were paying all these sociologists and scientists to gather. So when you consider that it started as a DARPA and BARDA project, then that to me puts a whole different spin on things. And to me, again, I don't know empirically. This is just my hunch after 4 years of digging into this. So because it was an Intel project and it had the potential and high likelihood of being originally for you know, for germ warfare, bioweapons, that research, then all of the protection of Fauci, all of the cooperation, they have someone from FOIA, you know, coaching them, and they have the entire media, the whole mighty Wurlitzer, running defense for them. How, you know, it's just like they say with the JFK assassination. You know, the mafia couldn't have done it because they did not have the wherewithal to cover it up. But who has the wherewithal, the bandwidth, the technology, the unlimited black budget to cover the origins of COVID? Because, you know, people were saying, oh my God, what kind of international fallout if, you know, it turns out that, you know, the Chinese were in on this, and then the U.S. is in on it. It's a powder keg internationally. Well, how about even worse if it's this secret military program that got loose? It, you know, a leak happened, and they were all hands on deck, and they made, you know, make Fauci the figurehead of it and protect him. Who enjoys media protection like this? It is airtight. It is airtight, except for some social media and some alternate media. You know, the Jimmy Dores and the Max Blumenthals and Matt Taibbis and Glenn Greenwalds, those who are not corporately affiliated with media organizations but are doing old school muckraking, those guys are able to tell some truth. But they all say that, you know, they have been messed with, their servers, their computers. You know, they've been looked into. So it makes sense to me to see it in that light with the information that I have so far, that it's probably this whole cover up, this whole whitewash and everything is probably being spearheaded by the very intelligence community that started and greenlit this project.
Right. When you say greenlit, I'm thinking of, is it called Event 201?
Where
they had a, trial. They had a simulation. They say, this is what we're going to get ready to be doing. It reminds me of when President Kennedy had been killed. It was just like a week before or something. They had a rehearsal of a presidential, you know, assassination funeral parade. You know, they were rehearsing for it. And, oh, he just got killed.
What were they doing? What was the Air Force and military doing the day of 9/11? They were doing exercise, supposedly, and so
they were disengaged,
and not free to immediately scramble, intercept those jets.
Well, yeah, let's. We have so many other topics we could just talk on. I just want to get, you know, for people's limited interest, if, you know, if they tuned in, I said, listen, I really think there's some things you should be following here, and you might want to follow some of the excerpts of the Fauci testimony. But I know that there are more things that have been popping up on my radar that I think on your Facebook page, at least, you have been making links to or talking about. And I want to make sure some of these things got into the atmosphere of my friends that had been, you know, or people that tune in to the show. And so go ahead with some of the other things, because problems to the heart.
Myocarditis.
Myocarditis and sudden death. These things, I think what caught my eye also about a month ago was in England, they started having, I think, an honest investigation where they weren't covering up facts. And is it called the NIH in England?
NHS, National Health.
Yes, they were revealing adverse reactions, deaths due to the vaccine, and they were in the thousands. Like, if I had to guess, it was like 380,000 adverse reaction, over 40,000 deaths that were attributed. Yeah. 40,000 people, you went in, you got the shot, a couple of days later, whatever, you died. And they go, well, it's, we're seeing a pattern here. A certain group of people.
Right. There were other medications prior to COVID that if you had 50 deaths, they would pull it and go back to the lab. And the reason, again, in comporting with my theory about the origins of it and in being in intelligence, why was there a push to get this vaccine into everybody? There was huge media push. Politicians were making fools out of themselves. We'll give you a burger. We'll give you French fries. We'll give you this, a free car wash. But, you know, if you got something good, you don't have to beg people to take it. And what was the impetus for pushing this when they knew it was untested? You know, we're in the largest clinical trial in all of humanity because of the billions of people worldwide that have taken the vaccine, and it's going to take, we're only 4 years out. They usually test a vaccine under normal circumstances for 10 years before it gets full FDA approval in the U.S., so we're not even at the halfway point. And so there's adverse reactions. There's been, you know, excess deaths. It shows up in those figures. And one reason NHS has such good data, because they're the National Health Service. Every Brit has that service. So their electronic health records are population wide. And so they have a unique positioning to be able to really aggregate data, you know, instead of going, well, 30, you know, people have Kaiser, 30 people have Adventist Health, you know, and you have to do it up that way. And there's a lot of uninsured people in America. the people that fall between the cracks, so the data is not as solid and reliable. You know, my day job, I work for a healthcare company as an administrator of an electronic health record system. So this is right in my wheelhouse. And NHS has those great figures because literally every UK resident is on their rolls and in their EHR, and they can just run reports and aggregate that data. So not only excess deaths, but the natural increase rate globally is falling. Now, younger people are, you know, having less and less babies in the more developed countries, the richer countries. There's a cultural shift there, but there's been a bunch of issues with pregnant women who have been vaccinated. And so there's been, you know, reports of spontaneous abortions, babies being aborted by the mother's body, you know, other instances, things with lactating and issues of...
Right, but do you want to go, do you have any of those numbers in front of you? Because, I mean, it was staggering.
I do not, but yeah, definitely.
Well, I recall a number around 40%. Like, this is just like 4 out of 10 women then lose their baby.
Yeah, which is...
Due to the vaccine.
Yeah, Dr. Peter McCullough, a Texas cardiologist, has done a lot of work in that regard. And again, you know, he's a staunch right-wing guy, so I stay away from the political part of it. But he is probably the most cited and published cardiologist in America. And he has dealt with the myocarditis issue primarily, but also has put out a lot regarding the the pregnancy and lactation, all of those issues. And then he also has a Substack. Matt Taibbi has a Substack. Alex Berenson, who used to be a New York Times reporter, that he started reporting, you know, true stuff on COVID and that, and he got kicked off of Twitter and actually sued them and won. They gave him his account back.
And just for those that don't know, Substack is another forum where you can write articles and you won't come under censorship.
Yeah, like a blog post.
Right, and people can subscribe to you, so you could pay like a $5 a month or $10 a month. So writers could make an income by writing articles and doing research, and then if you like that, you would support them there. That was the idea in Substack.
Yes, and they're not regulated so far by any ideological thing. They're kind of like the video channel Rumble in that respect. People say, oh, Rumble, it's a right-wing thing. Well, no. It's just open, but all the right-wing people go there because they get censored on YouTube. There's a couple people that I listen to, found them on YouTube, Jimmy Dore, who I know you listen to, and Kim Iverson. And they'll do, when they're dealing with one of the more controversial subjects or the ones that are getting right up against the censors, they'll do 5-10 minutes intro, and they go, okay, join us on Rumble, and we're going to take the conversation over there. And so Substack is like a, you know, text version of Rumble. It's where people can share those opinions and that research without fear. Knock on wood so far.
Yeah, imagine that we're talking about this, that is, there's supposed to be free speech, and free speech is supposed to be uncomfortable speech. So if you don't like what the guy's writing, don't log in, don't read. But don't ban him. And it's more than ironic that I'm listening to somebody and they say, okay, we're on YouTube now. We're going to have to go over to Rumble, everybody. You know, like.
Yeah, that you have to speak like that. And
we can't talk. There's going to be kids in the room.
Right, exactly. The adults are leaving. Yeah, on the, you know, going back to that, and it touches on this subject, going back to the origin, you know, of COVID thing and the, censorship, you know, YouTube is owned by Google. And so whatever tenets of censorship, whatever their philosophy politically, socially is, it translates to YouTube as well. I'm trying to remember who wrote the article. I posted it on my Facebook talking about the origins of Google, and James Corbett, who's a Canadian who's been living in Western Japan for many years now. And he has a website called thecorbettreport.com. He was the one, I remember him saying before COVID, saying, I'm over on these other platforms, and you need to start following me there, because I guarantee you with the things that I am posting, I am definitely going to get thrown off YouTube. And he did. But James Corbett did a little thing a couple years ago that was really good on the origins of Google and how it was, you know, the internet was funded by DARPA. But I never got what the connection was. Well, basically, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, the two founders of Google, you know, the popular American success story, folk hero thing, is that it's two guys in their garage. They're poor Stanford students, but they had an amazing idea for this search engine, writing this code, and boom, it changes the world. Well, it turns out their grant was funded by DARPA from the get-go. The money behind the foundation of Google, the writing of the code, everything was DARPA. It was defense and intelligence. And then he talks about when Google Maps came out. You know, I'm world geography geek. I geek out on that stuff. When Google Maps and Google Earth came out, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, and I want to take an aerial tour of Aberdeen, Scotland. Boom, you can do it. You know, block by block. It's amazing. Well, how did they get that technology? That was the defense and government's keyhole satellite technology that did that. And when it came time to make that version of it public, that's the old version, who got it? Google did, because of their work and their connection to intelligence and the military through DARPA. Then they talk about how there was a part of State Department, something support analyst department, or whatever, but they were basically, trolling the internet, trying to do research on uprisings and youth movements in various countries around the globe, so that the CIA could either support the ones that they liked because they were overthrowing governments that the CIA was hostile to, or they could crush those groups who were hostile to the governments the CIA was propping up. And they had this kid, Jared Cohn. He's like 30 years old, and they bring him in, and he's going, why are all you old fuddy-duddies on, you know, listservs and chat rooms? You need to be on, this is like 2006 or 7. He goes, you need to be on Twitter. You need to be on Facebook. You want to track youth? That's where they are. And so this kid did all that work, got them hipped on how to follow and try to sway youth movements globally through social media. Then that kid, he's getting written up in the Washington Post as, you know, he's like the wonder kid of intelligence and of the State Department, and he's a golden child, and he could be president if he wants to. And he suddenly leaves for this small little startup company with like 5 people. He went to Google. Most likely sent there. Didn't just, well, I'm going to leave all this Hollywood, Washington, D.C. glitz and glamour and success I've suddenly found at a young age for some revolving door and be a CEO. He goes to this do-nothing company. At the time, Google wasn't even on the top 100 companies list yet. They were just this little startup. But oddly enough, this wonder kid went there. I'm almost certain he was sent. So if COVID was the leak and potential exposure of a very deep op and program for biowarfare, bioweapons, then you can see why Google and YouTube would be perfectly aligned with whatever the White House, State Department wanted to do with that. Whatever voices they wanted to crush and whichever voices they wanted to amplify. It just is another facet of it that seems to make sense when viewed from that angle.
Well, getting past Google and the background to this, I think one of the things that caught my eye about a month ago or so was that AstraZeneca was completely pulled. And now they were saying, many governments, this is bad. Like, you know, get rid of your old stock kind of thing. Like, there's...
Yeah.
Do you want to just get into a little bit of that or some of the articles that caught your attention?
Well, yeah, I think it was definitely a matter of, you know, AstraZeneca was mostly in the UK and I think in certain parts of Europe, but they never did the numbers, had the output that Pfizer and Moderna did. But that it got pulled completely, I believe, I read this week, one of them, I think it might be AstraZeneca, is now working on an mRNA-based RSV vaccine for respiratory syncytial virus, which is a virus that's, you know, very similar in its symptom set to COVID. So, yeah, just kind of like, okay, retooling. You know, like, we're not making widget A now. Next year we're going into widget B. So let's pull out all the old stuff, retool the machines, and we're going with widget B.
Right. And the other thing that should concern people is that you can't sue them. They're immune from prosecution. And if you want to do something, they've set it up where you have to sue your own government. And then governments of each country will have a fund there that will pay out for these, quote, adverse reactions. But these guys just make money hand over fist. They don't care if it works. They put it out. And then if in this case, okay, like you were mentioning, last year's stock is no good. There's actually problems with it. We'll rename it and we'll put out something different.
Right. And again, pardon me for keep going back to my origin theory, but another thing that's striking about it, never before has a company that manufactured any medicine treatment ever been granted blanket immunity from prosecution or from being sued, any legal action. Why? How did they get that kind of power? It's like, okay, to my mind, this thing leaked out. We got big problems. The vaccine is not ready to go, but that's all we got. Get it out there and get it into everybody. Moderna, Pfizer, go. We got your back. We will cover you. You know, how did they get that kind of blanket immunity? That's unprecedented. But it's very, very telling that they pulled it. You know, AstraZeneca in the UK, they completely pulled it. But I believe they're the ones who are working on, I read it this week, and I can't remember who, working on an RSV vaccine that is mRNA-based.
And also, the thing was, I think AstraZeneca was actually closer to a, quote, vaccine, where, like you mentioned, the new ones were RNA. No, that's not right exactly. RMNA. What's the... What's the Pfizer one?
Well, it's just the Pfizer vaccine.
The technology.
Oh, the technology, yeah, the mRNA technology.
mRNA, right. Right?
And
so that, as they say, that kind of widens the goalposts of what they're calling a vaccine and what is not a vaccine, and this is something different, you know?
They had to... change
the definition.
Change the dictionary of vaccine. And then anti-vaxxer was changed. These are someone that was against vaccination. And then they broadened it. I forget what the specific new definition was. But it was like any, you know, product calling itself a vaccine or whatever to include the mRNA. Basically, they're gene therapy treatments is what they are, technically. They're gene therapy.
Right, okay. So then going back, we saw that I think a week ago, there was a debate from Chris Cuomo and broadcaster Dave Smith, right?
Who's
you know, it's I hate to just say a comedian, but he's a comedian. But sometimes you listen to a guy like George Carlin or something like that, and you go, no, there's so much truth. He's slapping us in the face with the truth, and we're laughing, but we shouldn't be, you know?
But he's a social commentator, just like Jimmy Dore. He's a stand-up comedian by trade, but...
Right. You know what I'm getting at. But for somebody who was just thinking, what do they got, you know, comics up here telling jokes about stuff. But he now was talking about ivermectin, that he's taking it now. And while he was working for CN, they called it horse dewormer. And they just went on and on for months against Joe Rogan until finally Joe Rogan had the medical doctor, Sanjay Gupta, from CNN on his show and said, you're lying
that was
to people.
Great.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was great. But now you see Cuomo, and he's the only guy really that come out to discuss it. I mean, he got lambasted by Dave Smith because he just said, like we're talking about right now, number one, you don't really know if it works, and show us the data if it works. And then what do you mean you've got data, but you want that locked up for 75 years? I mean...
What does that tell you?
Yeah. What does that tell you right there? And so many, you hate to kind of jump on the bandwagon of saying, oh, there's something wrong. But I mean, the number of people that have been dropping dead, you know, and then you go, we'd like to see the actual data of people that went in with a pre-existing condition that I think Fauci or somebody said there was 20 or 30,000 people die a year just from what you might call the flu or pneumonia or something. And if you're elderly, you're overweight, you have diabetes, and you catch something, you might pass away from that. And I think that I was I didn't know the number was so big that it was, you know. And of course then they say, well, the number of people that passed away from the flu went down to zero. They all died from COVID, you know. Nobody
and that can be
I'm saying that facetiously.
The Chris Cuomo thing, you know, I don't know if you've seen where the part where Dave Smith.
Oh, I listened to it. Yeah.
Yeah. He said you were really shaming people vehemently on CNN, you and Don Lemon, about ivermectin. He goes, no, I wasn't. He goes,
Play the clip. Yeah.
He goes, play the clip, and they had it queued up, and then after that, it just had him dead to rights. And he said, "Well, no, I wasn't really shaming the people." And it's like, wow, if you can lie that hard after being shown the truth in front of a crowd of people and on camera, being recorded, that is stunning, that amount of denial.
So these are just a couple of the things that were in the news in the last couple of weeks that, like, I think it started for me when they said AstraZeneca is being pulled completely and out of the study being released in the UK, that they're seeing big, big numbers of problems. That's when I was tuning into some of the things that you were... Because I don't click on everything every day. I get an awful lot of, you know, email from people saying, you could check this out, check this out, right? But then I started to see, oh, it's going to culminate with this week with the Fauci testimony. And I just wanted to make sure that I gave you a chance to even bring me up to speed. Like, so what are the important things that we should be thinking about this week, early week of June 2024?
Well, thank you again. Like I said, it's always an honor to be on the show because I've been a listener for so long and have learned so much myself and been enlightened so much.
Right, and you are ear to the ground because you're in this industry at arm's length, you know. And but no, I'm just asking you: is there any more things as well? It's like, what have we missed anything right now yet? Or
well, the thing that I'm keeping an eye on and those. Like me, who have been really, you know, remained intensely interested in this. It's like, okay, the World Health Organization, right, is trying to get an international treaty passed and where they would basically be able to declare a pandemic globally and make decisions over sovereign nations as far as their pandemic response. And thank God it got shot down, but I have no illusion that they won't keep trying and that they'll probably, you know, just grind the resistance down and get it eventually. But the other thing that they're talking about now is this avian bird flu, and that they're finding it and they're going out and PCR testing, you know, chicken ranches, egg farms, and culling huge numbers of birds. And it has traditionally been a strain of bird flu that does, its virality, its ability to spread is very high in those populations. And it's crossed over to another couple animals. And then they've had, I think, four, maybe five workers on these ranches, you know, globally, five people in the whole world that have tested positive for it. And so I'm just keeping my eye on that one, because when COVID started with this slow little drip, drip, drip in the news, and, you know, we were all caught off by it, but now we know what to look for. So that's the thing I'm keeping my eye on, because the World Health Organization talked about, Fauci himself said, oh, there's going to be another pandemic, I guarantee you. Really?
Yeah, wink, wink.
Yeah, disease X. And so, you know, anytime there's a report in the news about something like this bird flu, okay, is this disease X? Yeah, they're going to call, is there going to be a breakout of RSV somewhere, and that's disease X? You know, now they've got all that infrastructure in place to just, boom, light it up. You know, COVID, they had to construct it, and everyone was locked down, so they had carte blanche to do it. But now...
Well, I was surprised the number of people that I've come across now that say they never took the jab, and it's quite a number of people. I mean, somehow I thought everyone was forced into it, you know, mandated down.
Yeah.
And what I had someone on to talk about in Canada is these new laws about calling everything hate speech and disinformation, and then there'll be these big fines. And you have made a link to the EU has got a new thing for disinformation and censorship, that they're meeting with big tech. And, you know, it's appalling because nobody gets to, you know, like, what is hate speech?
It's what they say it is.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They will make it so broadly and ill-defined, so amorphous, that they can make it fit whatever they need. And it's narrative control. Plain and simple. Now that everybody, the world, talks to each other online, they can go in and be, you know, and control that. And that's narrative control. We don't want you talking about these things or saying these things. You know, we will approve your speech. It's Orwellian.
The other thing that it caught our eye that probably people should know about also is that the New York Times had published an opinion piece that said, it looks like this did start in a lab. This is in the lab, in Wuhan, in the research lab. It wasn't, what do they call it, a pangolin or some bat in a wet market. And I was quite happy the way South Park really lampooned that whole.
Oh, they did.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think the piece you're talking about may have been the one written by Alina Chan. A-L-I-N-A-C-H-A-N, Alina Chan. I've been following her on Twitter for most of the pandemic. And you know how, like in the JFK research, you have specialists, you know, like Dr. David Mantic with the x-rays and that, and, you know, different ones that specialize in certain aspects of the case. Her thing has been on lab leak and origin. She has just gotten into the weeds and dug in deep, deep, deep into that exclusively. You know, she's really... done great work.
You know, I'd really appreciate if after we finish the call, if you could later on just send me, you know, five or six links that you think, because I think I'm thinking of the one at Peter McCullough, but, you know, some of these people I'm not with. So if you say, Len, make sure that people you recommend, they check out these different sites, then I'll put it in the show notes like an active link.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, right. Well, that's good. I think probably this week people will, you know, anyway, I'm just thumbing through your site right now, so there's so many articles. But I just want to make sure that people didn't gloss over this, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll leave it at that, I guess, for now. I just, because I have many interests as well, and so I don't cover them all. And if somebody comes up with something and you have your ear to the ground on this topic, and I just trust that you say, if you give me some advice, that these are some important things happening. And I think it really, you know, mushroomed with Fauci on TV. I was watching yesterday and then today, and I'm sure there'll be something tomorrow. But at least with YouTube, like right now, they must be trying to hang on, because I heard that Rumble is took them over for the most live feeds a couple of days ago.
Like so I many. Sure so.
Yeah, so many people are going to Rumble now, and it doesn't have the same stature as the word YouTube, but go to Rumble to find information. It might be a little harder
like
to
I
find.
Said, yeah, like I said, people have, you know, just dismissed it out of hand as a right-wing hub, and it's not. Just a lot of the people that are conservative politically or Republicans, because they were getting censored on YouTube, they went there. But there's people of all stripes on Rumble, and the beauty is that, like I said, knock on wood, so far they don't censor content.
Yeah, and the other pleasant surprise was we didn't mention him yet, was Tucker Carlson, that I listened to some of his long interviews, and they're just especially with Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
Do you know? It's just, you learn so much from him. You go, well, that's not what I heard on the news. Oh, I, you know, and calling anybody an anti-vaxxer, I just get my back up, you know? You know.
Yeah. You know, and like, now that he is free from the corporate control of Fox News, you know, like I say, you know, he's a conservative. Yeah, I'm not a Republican, but his interviews have been fearless. It's been great. I wonder how long he'll last on YouTube.
Well, it doesn't matter on YouTube, because I go straight to his website.
Yeah.
I go straight to, I think it's called the Tucker Carlson Network.
Right? Okay.
And I'll make a link to that for people who don't know. You can sign up and join for $10 a month, you know, like I do. Or a lot of things are free. You can still see stuff there.
Right.
It's like that with Jimmy Dore. Like Jimmy Dore's, if you sign up for the subscription, $10 a month, you get everything, but otherwise you'll see half-hour clips of many topics on YouTube and on Rumble. On Rumble, go to Rumble as well. I think the thing is, when you're on Rumble or YouTube, sometimes you get commercials. But if you just go to the person's website and you watch it from there, and or if you're, once you're a member, then you don't see any commercials.
Excellent.
All right, Michael Gregory, it's a pleasure to be able to speak to you. And thanks for taking this invitation and sharing your time with us. And just before we wrap up, is there anything that I didn't get to you'd like to mention about this topic?
Not really. Again, I appreciate you following it to the degree you have and being a resource for people and a beacon, you know, to get those viewpoints and some actual truth out there. I appreciate you very much.
Okay, well, thank you, right? Yeah, I mean, I am interested, and I usually try to make the show like, if I'm interested, somebody else will be in, and if you're not, you're not. You just don't listen. But yeah, I just didn't want people to miss this. I mean, lately I'm getting scared to even open the back door about this war in Ukraine and Russia and the threat of missiles going over, and then the accidental launching of one missile, which triggers everything, the automatic response.
Right.
The more I look into it, I'm listening to... Did you hear that Scott Ritter got his passport taken away? He was going to a conference.
I read that today.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's what you think about the old Soviet Union, right?
Right.
And he's going there to a peace conference where he was... I heard him talk a day or two before, and he was saying, I'm trying to go over there and say, listen, you might have problems with our government, but there's a lot of American people, just the people of America, that don't want a war. So if there is some kind of accident, can you guys maybe just, can you give us, you know, time to sort out that there could be, you know, somebody crosses a red line, they're not, so it's unbelievable. Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah, so yeah, they pulled him off. He's not allowed out of the country. I mean, at least he's here. He's not like Edward Snowden, who had to hide out. And luckily, he was granted political prisoner status, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's another topic, but I'm you know, as well as JFK research and, you know, Bobby Kennedy, things like that, I'm interested in a few things in the world we live in. And, yeah, these things that are coming out about just the fraud in the Pfizer and AstraZeneca and the other ones. And the fact that the real professional people that had a different opinion on it, they were muzzled. They were banned. They had their accounts taken away. You know, even with a political thing about the New York Times had their Twitter account pulled because they were talking about the Hunter Biden laptop. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, what? I mean, free speech is meant, it meant, you know, let the guy write the article. You can read it, critique it, or don't even buy the paper at all, you know?
Yeah.
So thank God for X. Oh, and Russell Brand is somebody else that I listen to, too, that
I was going to say him. Thank you. He's really had an amazing transformation. And he's another one of the ones, like Kim Iverson and Jimmy Dore, that'll say, okay, 15 minutes, join us on Rumble, where we can actually talk about this.
And it's funny. A few people tell me I don't like his laugh. He makes too many jokes. And to me, it's a little bit strange that the broadcasters come from a comedic field. There's quite a few people that were comedians that have stuck with this, and he's one of them. But
look, if that's the price of admission to get some truth, I'll pay it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I didn't come from any comedy field. But I think, you know, people, they just want a straight interview. They want to hear the guest. They want to hear the guy. And if you don't like that guy, just don't tune in. I don't want censorship. I don't want the people banned. It's like Alex Jones. I might not listen to him maybe once a month. But if he's there, so I can tune in. I don't want him banned. Some people I don't listen to every day. But, you know, some of these other guys, like Jimmy Dore and Russell Brand, and you mentioned Gabor Mate.
Yeah.
Aaron Mate, yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for your time. If you can, send me a couple of links of something that you think are important articles, maybe even one we forgot, and I'll put them on the show notes.
Very good.
Thank you for that as well, then.
All right, thank you, Lynn.
You're very welcome. Okay, good night.